It is Thursday, the 15th of May, and this is episode 208 of Digital Outbox. Yep, welcome along to another episode. Chris here, hosting as ever, joined by Ian. Hello, Ian.
Good evening, Christopher.
Not wanting to put the kibosh on our show, but reading the show notes just now, I did manage to fall asleep. So we're starting this about 10 minutes late. Nothing to do with the quality of the content. Everything to do with having a hard day at work. Promise. Right?
Well, I think so. I'm ranty. I'm ready.
Hey, he's keyed up. He's ready to deal with the privacy nuts. So we've had this. We talked about this story. Oh, goodness me, we've been talking about this for probably about 4 years now. This is the British phonographic industry trying to get people banned from the internet for downloading copyrighted information. And we've kind of now come up. Well, they've come up with their voluntary copyright alert program, VCAP. And this is kind of where all of the it started off this story with masses and masses of legal speak saying, right, we're going to ban people after three letters of complaint that they're downloading bad stuff, and that's going to be controlled by the copyright owners. Then what it's ended up being is that four letters will be sent to people with increasing severity of educational message in those letters. And once four letters have been sent to any one person, those letters will stop. There's no threat involved. There's no legal basis involved. It's just four letters. Where do you sit on this?
I've just bought Royal Mail shares because the only people that I can see benefiting out of this is the Royal Mail.
Yes. Apparently, there is also a cap of overall number of messages that may be sent out, up to 2.5 million messages.
So basically in the third week of January.
I mean, if you think about the amount of cash that's been spent on this this process, I almost think that actually we've come away here with something that's worse than useless, as far as it doesn't have any teeth at all. And we always agreed that it was ridiculous to try and take away internet access from people, but it's equally as ridiculous spending all this money on what amounts to just paper, you know, just letters.
Yes, and assuming that the ISPs were always against this.
Of course, they were. They didn't want to police it.
No, absolutely. And when they signed up, they said they were against it, but they were kind of reluctantly signed up. And you know, BPI were hailing it as this is a massive step forward. And of course, the government were saying, "Hey, this is what everybody was looking for." But it's so watered down. It's incredible.
It doesn't relate anything to what we were talking about before, which was that, you know, the three strikes and you're out rule. And I think people realised that was a ridiculous position to take. But the rights holders are going to be paying $750,000 towards to each service provider to facilitate this process. Or 75% of total costs, whichever figure is the smaller of the two. And they're also on an ongoing yearly basis. They will be supplying £75,000 to each provider to allow, I guess it's the admin and running of this process, which isn't going to get them anything. I mean, like I say, you can hear the committee in the fact that these letters are not allowed to be threats. They are merely educational. So, you know, you are damaging jobs. You are, you know, this is not free stuff. You're stealing this kind of thing.
Hold on, summer's here.
It's the summertime.
Ice cream van. And it's 20 past seven. Note that in your diary.
There we go. But, I need to go and get an ice cream.
Yeah, I've had mine. But as we're saying, so watered down, it's costing so much. The only, I can't remember who it was I was talking to, this wasn't a me thing. The only thing, the angle that somebody said to me was that at least it gives the BPI and the industry some sort of tangible figures that they can actually go back and say, see how damaging this is.
Yes,
so we do need to take it a step further, because this here is the hard and fast facts of how much this is now costing us.
And because and part of this is the fact that the BPI, the ISPs will keep data for up to a year on customers and what they've downloaded and what, you know, they've been warned about this, but the BPI doesn't have access to that information. as yet, but that could be something that comes in future that they do then get access. But like you say, they will get some sort of statistical output on the numbers of letters that have been sent. And so, yes, they can then actually go to government and lobby a bit more based on that. So, yeah, maybe that's what they're holding on to for now.
And for me, to the pirate base I go.
Yeah. I had another court ruling to do this. We reported on this when the first court case happened. And this was Oracle claiming that Google had taken and used its APIs. This wasn't necessarily actually taking the actual APIs that Oracle had written. It was just using a similar concept inside the Android operating system. So it was Google effectively rewriting an API to access Java's underlying processes. And Oracle said, we own those APIs and Google's not allowed to use them. And the original court case came back and said, you don't own an API. An API is a concept. You can't own copyright on that. But this appeal case, the judge has now said, no, you can copyright it.
Completely bar me. I really don't get this because at the time, and I've put it in the show notes, and this was in 2012, and it said APIs were simply a function or an idea and not an expression subject to copyright protection. And for me, you know, when I'm dealing with vendors, if we've got an API support, it's like that's the route I want to go down. I want to use that API so that if they change their back end in any way, I know that API, unless they deprecate it, they'll usually maintain that. If I hit the API, I'm, my code's guaranteed. I find it bizarre.
I think it's more though that I think if I remember rightly, it was because Google rewrote the way that was going to use their API. So and Oracle has said that those functions that then hooked into their back end code had been copyrighted.
But this isn't,
even though Google rewrote them.
I know, but I mean, an API is and it's in there as what they class as a functional concept. So an API isn't a piece of code. I mean, if you've got an API on its own, you can't do anything with it. You need everything else round about it. And I mean, this new judge is actually starting to say that things like java.lang.ref, java.lang.reflect are equivalent to Charles Dickens' A Tale of Two Cities.
Yeah, and
it's not.
I mean, the original judge in the case and actually went away and learnt a bit of Java to try and understand. Yep. What was going on and what was meant by all these things. And it sounds like the appeal judges have taken is trying to see an analogy with, you know, writing and copyright in writing, when actually that's not, you know, programming is, it's not like writing, in that writing's a completely free and, you know, free way of, okay, you have sentence constructs, but it's not the same. You know, if you ask two people to write a hello world function, they would pretty much come up with the same functional construct of that. Whereas if you told people to describe a scene, they would do it in a very, very different way.
And absolutely.
So that's where programming is not analogous to writing of fiction, basically.
No, and I am sure Google will appeal this.
Of course they will. Yeah. I mean, they're saying they're holding fire at the moment just to look at their options.
They've got to.
And it's got wider implications as well, as to, again, what is code? What can you and can you not copyright? Another case we reported on way back when, and I guess this is just now the first output of that. This is how long it takes. Was a Spanish man had complained to the court that he couldn't get rid of some of his history because it was appearing in Google searches. And obviously, Google's argument was, well, it's appearing in searches because it's freely available on the internet, and our searches just, pull together that information into, you know, one place. And his argument was, no, it's, you know, I have the right to ask you to not show that. And the court has actually come back and sort of upheld that, saying, yeah, you have the right to be forgotten. This is the European court. You have the right to be forgotten, and therefore you have the right to request that Google remove references. There's some criteria there, but effectively they're saying Google has now got to manage and maintain that process of receiving complaint from someone and removing search results from their index.
Yep, so the EU said it was a clear victory for protection of personal data. And I'm really conflicting this. I can really see both sides. And I really don't think it's fair on Google. I mean, and as usual, we're getting lots of people, I guess, on both sides of the camp, lots of people saying, there you go, Google, it's about time you treated our data seriously. But they're indexing, you know, the internet. You know, and in this particular case, it's not data that Google have you know, mined. Or yes, they have mined it, but you know what I mean. It's not like they are illegally holding it or whatever. And I just think I think it's really wrong to expect Google. You know, so what they're basically saying is that now it's going to be easy for a footballer or an MP or somebody famous or somebody with money to basically say, Google, you need to remove this from your search index. Basically remove it from the internet without removing it from the internet because it's still out there.
Yes, and because they wouldn't be allowed to move it from certain places of record because it is a piece of record. And you're right. They're trying to be able to. I mean, because of the way people use the internet now, which is search engines form such a big part of that. Yes, they're trying to hide that information away, even though it does exist. And it, you know, the court now says, yeah, but that is Google's responsibility. And obviously, that just puts an onus on them. They say it comes down to censorship, and I think they're probably right.
And as I said, I was quite conflicted about this. At first, I was like, well, this is probably a good thing. You know, if you want your data to remain private, you should be able to have that option. One of the forums at the company, somebody was saying they don't want to put their image up on our corporate address book, phone book, even though everybody said it's a good idea. So when somebody, you know, if they're coming to see you for the first time, they know what you're going to see. But he was like, no, I don't put my image anywhere on the internet. And this is me putting an image up in a corporate intranet, which somebody could then take and put elsewhere. I want to control, you know, who where my data is and who can do what with it. And I thought a fairly extreme view, but legitimate, you know, absolutely legitimate.
And it probably depends on whether you take the viewpoint of someone, you know, if you want to hide something away, or whether you take the viewpoint of should other people be able to hide their, you know, their data away. And on a personal level, and then on a legal basis, I guess, is, you know, is it just irrelevant information that's actually going to hurt your life, you know, in some sort of way, but it, you know, it doesn't gain, there's no public interest to have that information out there and available.
No, but I mean, I've had a couple of reactions since then. I think the majority are saying this is, there's now a big onus in Google to do something, and surely they must, you know, appeal or fight this. So we've had Jimmy Wales, so founder of Wikipedia, just saying it's astounding, saying this is one of the most wide sweeping internet censorship rooms I've ever seen. I suspect this isn't going to stand for very long. If you really dig into it, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And asking Google, you can complain about something and just say it's irrelevant, and Google has to make some kind of determination about it. Then it's back to the ISPs,
Power. They need all that, you know, the human resource to be able to do that.
And what's come out today is that the BBC have revealed that they've already received fresh takedown requests after this court ruling. One of them was an ex-politician who's seeking re-election and is asked to have links to an article about his behaviour in office removed,
seem irrelevant.
No, and you know, certainly if you were wanting to investigate a potential, you know, vote, if you're going to vote, for example, you know, in European elections, and you wanted to do your own research rather than reading the leaflets, you would want to have as full and complete a record as possible.
As long as that record,
accurate.
Yeah. Exactly that, and maybe he's saying that that's not accurate, and that's why I want it removed, because it was proven to be inaccurate, and these early reports of saying that I was fiddling it, whatever it was, is not right.
No, and in that one, it didn't say whether the behaviour in office was actual fact or whether it was just other people reporting on it, which could be total bollocks. The second ones, however, so a man convicted of possessing child abuse images has requested link to pages about his conviction to be wiped. Mm. Now, you've been found guilty of something, you know.
Again, it's a matter of record, and it is a matter of public record.
And in that case, I would say Google should be quite rightly saying, no, I'm not going to remove that, because that's factual. I know this is back to the actual ruling, because the ruling says it's about people protecting their data, but there's certain data that I think should be out there in public. You know, remember the law, and I can't remember the name of the law, there was something about publishing where paedophiles in the UK are staying, you know, because they should be logging their location. Would you want to know if you're about to move into a neighbourhood and you've got two kids, that the guy, you know, that somebody's moving in next door, or you're moving about to next to a convicted paedophile? Would you want to know that?
Yeah, of course, as a parent, and you would want to know that, but as a matter of civil you know, vigilantism. I don't think that information could be trusted in the hands of the internet population, basically. That's,
and then
that's
the third
problem,
one,
isn't it?
A doctor wants negative reviews from patients removed from the results.
Mm.
And yes, you probably want to know that before you went to be his patient, but then are we going to find every shop saying, you know, every app wanting the negative reviews removed? Where does it stop? Where do you actually say, yeah, I want this information removed because it's damaging me in some way?
Is it the difference between it just being a random article posted by, you know, that's not necessarily verified or something, or is, and the distinction between that and getting something like that wiped, which can be defamatory and found to be inaccurate, compared to something that is of public record, and, you know, and is a matter of, you know, say court historical documentation. So yeah, it's a tricky one. I can see, like I say, like you said, I can, there's both sides of the argument, you can see it both ways, but it ends up coming down to the fact that really it's the sources of the information that need to have the to remove the content, not the person who's indexing the content. But with their great power of controlling all that and having them one of the best indexes, may, you know, and the way that they've directed the internet to be used, maybe they do have to take some of that responsibility on.
And I think to a certain extent they do. I mean, there's been some stories and some cases where the search results have changed, you know, for if you're a company and, you know, you've maybe not been in dispute with Google, but, you know, all of a sudden your page rank drops and your sales drop, and there's been no evidence why, and you're not doing anything spammy, you know. And I think some of those kind of things have to be a bit more transparent.
Google have always denied those kind of things, though, right?
I know, but sometimes when you look at the evidence, it's kind of hard to, you know, that one day was, you know, a certain result would bring something back in the top 10, and next day it was like, you know.
Google's answer is we always adjust our.
Exactly, but that's easy to say.
Our underlying.
That's easy to say. And the way to be most transparent, and that was, I guess that was always the argument when people said, you know, when they said Google's open and it's not evil. Well, show us how you do your search results.
Mm.
And yeah. Which, of course, they can't do.
No, they can't do that, no.
I've got to be honest, I changed my mind on this. At first, I thought, this is really good. And I'm actually thinking it's really bad. And that's where my mind's at the moment. I'd really do. Google, to be fair to them, I haven't commented apart from saying it's disappointing. Which I'm sure that, I mean, because how can they build? How can they build a tool? How can they build this? You know,
well, yeah, it starts becoming less and less viable for them as a company, and that's what they're thinking. You know, how do we work these things? Because they're, you know, they're being pushed on all sorts of fronts here, on their Android front, on the you know, this privacy front, and all sorts of different aspects around the world where different laws mean different things for them. And yeah, so who knows? I mean, in China, obviously, they've said we have to.
China, they pulled out, didn't they?
Yeah, they ended up pulling out, but they. They started having to vet things and stuff.
So maybe that's the answer. Maybe they just turn around and say, you know what?
Okay, well, you can't have our service then, yeah?
Yeah.
Maybe that's what they'll do.
Doubt it.
No, I, as do I. Twitter has introduced the mute feature across Android, iPhone and the web. So whereas before it was sort of, there were odd clients that you were able to mute people on, Twitter has introduced that as a core platform feature across their apps. Enables you to keep following someone, so you can still DM them and stuff like that, but you will no longer actually hear what they're tweeting about.
Finally.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, I use Tweetbot. I know we've talked about you using Tweetbot before. I still don't know if you're still on it or not.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You know, so you can mute. You can mute.
I never mute. I just unfollow people if I can't be asked.
Well, I do mute. But I tend to not so much mute people. Unless they're like, there's a couple of people that they're on a conference and there's like, I will tweet every word, and you're like, come on, get a grip.
Yeah. Mute topics though, right?
I mute topics, hashtags, Game of Thrones, GOT, hashtag spoiler, all these things have been muted. And it still doesn't stop, you know, people being, oops.
Your dickishness.
Yeah. But that's been... You know, and I think it's good that they finally brought out something like this.
Yeah. When you think of the actual fundamental, you know, what is Twitter? Well, you follow someone to listen to what they're saying. So then putting a tweet, you know, a mute filter on that person seems like ridiculousness. But the actual realities of using Twitter mean that actually it's sensible that you've got a connection there, but yet you just don't, you're not interested in what they're saying and don't want to hear it based on the fact that they... can be dickish.
Well, it's just certain days. It's the same in the office. You know, it'll be the same for you. You're talking to your mates, and sometimes it's like, I don't want to hear this. You know, and headphones going. I'll just stick my earphones on, and it's just like, ah, bliss. and to me, it's just the same.
So anyway, it's taken them about 2 years since the time Tweetbot did a similar thing, but they've done it, and it's across all their platforms.
When do you think we'll get timeline syncing?
Well, I'm surprised we haven't seen that. I mean, that's just the most sensible thing, to have a Twitter-organized pointer, you know, basically. Google Maps has now updated itself, and it is integrated much more of the UK public transport data. So America's had this for a while now, but we've now got more of the data pumped in, including ferries, bus routes, train timetables and stuff like that. We had some of this data in for key cities and locations around the UK, but actually it's just gone wider now. So we've even got coach lines in there and stuff like that. So they've pumped and fed in that extra data.
So good.
Yes.
We're so good. I tried it for all different routes around Glasgow, and it was
okay,
like... Oh, so good. I mean, it's even the fact it was just all the different bus options and stuff like that. It was like that.
Have they got live bus data yet? Because I know in America they do things like that as well. They've got the live
data. Not that
data.
I could see.
Yeah.
Not that
it's
I
just
could
the
see.
Routes. But it's great knowing, you know, the routes and the numbers and stuff like that that you need to go and take.
And obviously we talked before about the updates a few weeks ago and the traffic and all that. And it's just good to have that all overlaid. And it's just like,
Mash up, mash up, mash up.
Geek porn.
One of my favourite stories of this week, Dixons has joined up with Carphone Warehouse. Obviously, that excited the investors enough for them to drop the share price by, I think it was about 10%, wasn't it? Something like that. 10.3% when the share price dropped. And they came up with a new name. And what do you think that name might have been in? Well, I know you know it already.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, Dixon's Carphone. Jesus Christ. I mean,
that's kind of one of those things where, you know, we've got to come up with a name. It's Dixon's and it's Carphone Warehouse. So here are our options. We can have Dixon's Warehouse. We can have Carphone Dixon's. Or how about Dixon's Carphone? That's the one. Dixon's Carphone. What the hell? I mean, Carphone Warehouse is an outdated name in itself, right?
Yes. I mean, it's because when you think about it, who, when have you last heard anybody say, like, Carphone?
Exactly, because it used to, at one point, and it was a real, real tipping point for phones, it was when everyone said, oh, you need a mobile phone, because if your car breaks down, that means you can contact someone. And at that point in time, that was exactly why people wanted phones, and that's how they sold a lot of them. But ever since that one day... it's no longer been relevant, and Dixon's has used the only bit of that that was of no use at all.
And even if
the phone and the warehouse bit was fine, as in that's, but the car phone bit was rubbish.
And the best bit. So who's our chief executive? Sebastian James. The ability to take what we have built in electrical retailing and add the profound. Obviously, he's been listening to Johnny Ive. The profound expertise of Carphone Warehouse and connectivity when it is a leading force in retailing for a connected world. Not with the words bloody Carphone in it. Jesus Christ. No, and what reminded me of? Did you watch W1A, which was kind of follow-up to 2012?
I watched bits of it. I haven't watched it all yet. It's on Netflix. So
So the Siobhan Sharp brand consultant. No, just some. This to me sounds like a team of band consultants have got together and like, well, you know, we can't have like a warehouse, you know, that's cheap, and you know, we need to have both somehow. And Dixon's Carphone, there'll be some like, you know, they've just kind of taken two words and bang, they've put it together, you know, and it's just
it's like when was it Royal? Did the post office get rebranded? And then they spent a lot of money and they ended up saying, well, we're going to rebrand it as Post Office. It's like, oh, but that's what it was before. But we've come up now. It's just going to be Post Office.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous. It was something like that. It was something weird like that. It just ended up being the same. But yeah, so there you go. That's the worst name ever for a firm. And not surprisingly, they've dropped their shares. Microsoft has unbundled the Kinect.
Consignia.
Was it Consignia?
We'll rebrand ourselves Consignia, and it was such a failure they went back to being Post Office.
Microsoft unbundled Kindle from their Xbox One, or they are due to. So they've finally relented and said, okay, we're going to cut the price of our Xbox by chopping off Kinect. And consumers are going to be like, yeah, fine, that's great. I have now got a box that, you know, is limited. I think anyone who's invested into the Kinect world might be a bit more peeved.
Maybe. I there's one person I feel sorry about, and that's Roy. Roy listens to our podcast, and I kind of every so often on Instagram he'll say, "I've not bought an Xbox One because I'm fed up listening to Sweeps talking on about his woes with the Xbox One." This doesn't make any difference. So all they've done is, so they're saying this is cheaper. Yeah. We're taking the Kinect out, and this is what everybody was annoyed about. We're taking the Kinect out. Now it's £350. It's been £350 for the last 2 months. You could have bought a Titanfall bundle for £350.
And not only that, if you take away Kinect, it's a bit like them like going for the touch interface on where for their Windows 8, where some people don't have the touch interface. How do you unsnap a window without actually talking to the Kinect to unsnap a window on Xbox?
Well, sneaked out a day after all this was that they admitted that they have to work on changing the dashboard to make it more usable and less reliable in Kinect. And it's like, well, hey, well done, Microsoft.
Wow, well done.
I still remember.
Round of applause.
Yeah, exactly. I still remember that kind of day one experience. And I was like,
I still have it. I still get lost. What the hell am I doing? Yep. I just want to go and join a friend's game.
But it's that whole, I still remember joining. It was the, how do I get rid of this? You see Xbox unsnap. I'm not going to see it. Just see it. I'm not going to see it. Just press B. I've pressed it. But just press B. I've pressed it. But just press it. I'm not going to press it. And after about a couple of minutes of arguing with me, all right, I've got rid of it. What did you do? I pressed B. And we still have those moments of,
yeah,
Xbox unsnap.
It's always three times.
Xbox unsnap.
I actually mute myself while I do it to stop the embarrassment. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, and so there are things that happen on that dashboard that you cannot do or you cannot easily do without the Kinect turned on. So yes, they're going to have to go back, and a bit like Windows 8.1, you know, C, they're going to have to work out how do you do it without Kinect. And actually, they'll probably make it better for that fact.
And we're laughing and joking about this, but the other story came out was that they're hoping to now give more CPU, GPU over to the Xbox One because they reckon Kinect plugged in uses up about 10% of the resources.
Wow.
Which, okay, yes. And it's like, it's just a desperate attempt to actually try and, because there is a gap between, you know, PS4 and
yeah, PS4 is slightly ahead. Well, not even slightly ahead. They've proven with their resolutions that they can run with these early games.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, the resolutions have come out now for Watch Dogs, and everybody was, because somebody at Sony said Watch Dogs 1080p 60 frames per second locked in PS4 only, and everybody was like, oh, that's a big one, and it came out and it was like, no, it's 900p 30 frames per second, which is like, yeah, ouch.
But then the Xbox came out with some weird resolution like 790p.
792.
Okay,
and the interesting thing about 792 is that's what Titanfall runs at. So okay, there's something, I mean, in that. There's something about that. Is that some sort of shady, you know? And I know Forza did 1080p, but there must be something about the amount of throughput it's got that for certain games, that's its limit.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Anyway, so that's coming. They're going to drop the price to £350 in the UK, basically. So yeah, it's, I mean, that might help, and it does mean that you don't have a bit of hardware that you don't really want. But it also, you know, they're having to dilute their original vision for this thing, and they're kind of diluting it in line with what the PlayStation 4 has done. So they're actually playing catch up by just copying PlayStation 4, because they've now decided they're going to Xbox Gold is now going to come with free games on Xbox One. So in the same way that you've had it on Xbox 360 for some of the older games, now you will get to download games from being an Xbox Gold member. And one of the reasons that they've brought that in is because they are removing the need for Xbox Gold to be able to watch things like Netflix, where you already have to have a subscription to Netflix. You no longer need to have Gold membership to be able to watch that.
You said Gold member. Anyway,
I am a Gold member.
These changes are, I mean, the free game's good, and the paywall was always barmy. You know, the fact that you'd paid for Netflix and then had to pay £40 a year to watch Netflix on an Xbox One or Xbox 360 on top of your Netflix subscription was criminal.
Yeah, and it was, that was the one major reason why BBC iPlayer didn't come to Xbox for so long, was because they refused to sit behind that. They said we can't you know, constitutionally within our organization allow it to sit behind that paywall. So that was one of the reasons. But yeah,
and I mean, it's interesting because I think you're right. They are playing catch up now, but they have watered down this vision, because they had this vision of like this all in one media box that, you know, you can talk to, you don't need the controller for. And that's all popped.
And they couldn't deliver it. And they said, I mean, I think in the US it might have made more sense at the time because you could hook it up to your services, but in the UK and in Europe you couldn't, so it was kind of pointless. And maybe just maybe it'll point them in the right direction.
And a slightly bizarre kind of twist is that in some ways the PS4's got something coming out that needs a camera more than the Xbox needed Kinect, and that's the headset. As I've already said, the VR headset needs the camera to work.
It needs the camera to orientate itself, doesn't it? Yep. I mean, so it's some of the things that they're talking about for the headsets just sound awesome, though. I love some of this stuff. I saw a real-time movie of there was just someone going down in a shark cage. I can't remember what I saw it on, and they were just looking around with their headset on, and occasionally the shark would come and, you know, zoom in and attack. And it was just like, I bet when you've got that headset on, it feels like, you know, an engrossing experience, let's put it that way.
And I can't wait, because hopefully I'm only a couple of months away from the new Oculus Rifts, which obviously will be utilised for work purposes only.
Of course you will. Because I bet that's what Bomb uses his for.
Hey.
Okay. Right, so then Unreal Tournament is making a return, and it's going to be free.
Did you play Unreal Tournament?
I did. I went through a little phase of playing it. I wouldn't say avidly. I would say it was one of those student house, we networked a few computers occasionally just to have a bit of a play around.
Oh, you young pup. Yeah. That was past my student days. But I really got hooked. Really got hooked massively. Loved it.
And it was a good game. I mean, because it always used to be, you know, Quake and Doom. And then suddenly Unreal Tournament showed how you could have that real, real fast-paced action, you know, straight back in the fight. Expect to die within 2 seconds, but then you're back in the fight within one. So, it was just like boom, 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 constant.
And for some reason, a boom gun sprung to mind. I don't even know if that was Quake or not, but I just have this memory, as you're saying, of dying, getting straight back in and running to where I kind of get shot from, because you knew if you got there quickly, they were probably still hanging around in the same area.
It was somewhere in that area,
But also that feeling of, jump onto a server and there's only two of you, and it's just two people like running around a very small map, and just that whole one-on-one combat was really good.
Unreal was also the first, or one of the first games you could get on Xbox Live during the beta days, and it was a way of getting onto Xbox Live without actually having to sign up and get the Xbox Live pack. And I remember going to the shop because my pack was in the post and hadn't arrived. I remember going to buy Unreal Engine because it enabled you to sign up through its, you know, by installing the game, basically.
Fantastic.
And it was a reasonable game. So they're going to bring it back, and they've just been working on how they're going to do it, and it's going to be bringing back the older games. Is that reconditioned? Am I right with that? Is it brand new?
No, it's brand new. And the worry was, because some people were saying this will be awful if they go free to play, because the fear was they're going to go free to play and you buy guns and buy all sorts of nonsense. And it has gone free to play, and it's going to be fully moddable. They're going to develop it collaboratively. That's easy for me to say when I'm tired. So what they're trying to do is what they're saying is they'll fully blog, Twitch, do all the kind of things, and basically make it an open development process to try and deliver a game for gamers, you know, so that they'll be... And
games by committee never work.
I know, and that's part of the problem, because it's almost like you need somebody with a core vision to try and deliver on that vision, or else you just end up with, you know, it's almost like the mob rules, you know, and a mob can get together and start to take a game in a horrible direction.
A gamer is always going to think, well, if you just give me a big cock-off gun and I can splat everyone with one go, that's going to make me feel awesome. Unfortunately, yeah, it does for you. The whole game's ruined.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. But as I said, it's free. It's going to be in Mac, Linux, and Windows. It's just called simply Unreal Tournament. And it's funny because I loved Unreal Tournament, but as they started making all the kind of changes, all the kind of, was it 2004 and 2007, and it just never clicked the same way for me.
Sometimes games have their moment, and maybe that was its moment. Yeah, maybe we need a little bit more depth nowadays.
Yeah, absolutely. And what they're talking about is how they're going to make money is almost like through an app store. So allowing people to sell mods and guns and outfits and all that kind of stuff. And I guess they'll take a cut.
And if someone came up with a cool game mode, you'd be willing to do that. You know, that, you know, yeah, I can understand. Cool. That is the end of our news. And have you got a pick? I haven't got a pick.
No picks, because I thought there was enough in there.
Yeah. No, like I say, the fact that I fell asleep reading these notes is no is no spur on the
But to fear we're both I can tell we're both tired.
Yeah. So let's stop this. Well, you can find out more about us at digitaloutbox.com, and you can talk to us if you want to. Info@digitaloutbox.com, and we're on Twitter and Skype as Digital Outbox. If you want to find out about my racing, you can do at academyracer.co.uk. It will be on Motors TV this Saturday at 6:30 for the first time for race 2 at Donington. So if you fancy finding out how that went along, it'll be right then. Ian, where can we find you?
You're still just in front, aren't you?
Just hanging on to the lead of the championship.
So yeah, if you go to Chris's website, there's actually a couple of good videos from last weekend, and they're good to watch. I'll say no more than that. Twitter is Sweeper, and website is iand.net.
Okay, we will talk at you next week. Speak to you then. Bye-bye.
Goodbye. Oh, I don't know why I started clicking my fingers, because I'm just going to have to edit that out. A cock.
Can I formally say sorry to Henry?
Why?
Bang.
What's that got to do with Henry?
Not Henry. I'm talking Henry Heaton Henry.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the Mary Henry.
Henry. Yeah. No, I banged him.